Okay, we're about 80 minutes in by my count, so I'll try to finish off lecture parts 4 and 5 in the next 25 minutes or so. Oops. We are on page 93 of the PDF and starting section 4, which is study design, power, accuracy. And just taking a quick tour of some of the R capabilities for doing this, reminding you of some of the basics for simpler designs. And it's a little more complex for these longitudinal designs. You really want to know how often, how long, how many subjects, how often you need to observe them to make the study feasible. I.e., have some ability of detecting an effect if it's there. That's the power approach. Or better yet, to give you some accuracy and estimation of the treatment effect, i.e., the width of the confidence interval for the treatment effect. That's a much more natural way of thinking about things. It's not necessarily the way NIH does, but it's a good way scientifically. Do I have enough information, subjects, observations, to pin down a treatment effect? Maybe a big treatment effect, maybe a small one. You want to know the accuracy of which you're estimating it. That's one way of thinking about power. Just taking you back to STAT 60 or STAT 141, I've done both many times. You have staples in R like power.t.test, where you can ask, what's my probability of detecting effect if it's there, if I tell you how big the effect is, and how many subjects I have? Or give me back how many subjects do I need to have power 0.9 for a half standard deviation treatment effect. That's typical power calculations. You can see the structure of these longitudinal data sets have something in common, treatment control comparisons, but the structure of the data is more complicated. So the how many subjects question, it takes a lot more information input, probably more information than you have. And an alternative approach to using these algorithms is to make guesses at the structure of the data, create some artificial data, maybe 200 subjects per group, maybe 500 subjects per group, and look at the accuracy of the confidence interval you get, the width of the confidence interval, the accuracy of estimation. See if that's okay. That's another way of assessing feasibility. What we're going to do is just walk you through a quick introduction, some of the packages that I've talked about in the past, and there's one or two new ones that we should note since actually last time I taught this course. Look at it. Review question one, I believe it is. That works out some of these examples that are in the vignettes for the programs. You know, this is the kind of thing that is really study specific, and you need it when you need it, but it's hard to talk about in general because there aren't every study is a little bit different. So, starting out in PDF page 93, just on this basic idea, just trying to introduce you to the idea, but go back and look at power.t.test, power.anova.test for basics of these kind of ideas, the kind of calculations for familiar designs. So, package long power, longitudinal power, a good one. And these are some UCSD people, power for linear models of longitudinal data with applications to Alzheimer's. That's a good idea. So package long power, this is a vignette for it. Package long power has a manual, and we illustrate it in review question one. Suppose we wish to estimate the required sample size for inference regarding the interaction of treatment and time in a longitudinal placebo-controlled study. Now, just say a word about interaction of treatment and time. That's asking, is there differential growth? In the Brogan-Kuttner example, we saw gamma 1-1, which was a level 2 model for rate of change or amount of change, that is alpha 1. And that was the coefficient of group, alpha gamma 1-1. So you want to know whether group has any association with amount of change or amount of improvement. That's the experimental question. Is there an experimental effect? So you'll often hear about, talked about the interaction of treatment and time. That's just meaning it's a differential growth. It's gamma 1-1 in our level 2 formulation of Brogan-Kuttner, which can be extended, of course, when you have richer data, you're still fitting a time trend. So suppose we wish to estimate the required sample size for inference regarding the interaction of treatment time, i.e. differential growth. That's our treatment effect. Want to know how many do we need? So they do a couple of versions of this, artificial data, PDF page 94 from the vignette, and then a real example, which we redo and review question 1. Consider an Alzheimer's disease trial in which assessments are taken every 3 months for 18 months. Okay, we assume the smallest detectable effect size, 1.5 points on the cognitive disease assessment scale. So you have to put in how big the effect is going to be. Of course, if you had a good fix on this, you wouldn't have to run the study. Random intercept, error variance of 55, random slope to have variance of 24, things you don't know. Residual variance of 10, these are all level 1 and level 2 coefficients. These are your random effects. Coefficient random slope term random intercept is 0.8. That means them that has gets. Those that start out higher grow a lot more, i.e. they have less of the disease to impair them. First generated correlation structure, right? And so you have to put in all these things you don't know, and you'll get out. In effect, you need 200 people per group to get 80% power. That's probably on the low end of what's acceptable. Of course, you go to a higher alpha, that makes it may make tougher or easier. So that's your fall. Missing an effect that's there. Probability of detecting an effect when it's there is 0.8. It's better than 0.5, but you can see you get to judge whether it's feasible to have 200 subjects in each group. That may be way beyond your budget, or it may be feasible. That's the idea of power calculation. Rough idea whether the sample size calculation, whether the proposed study is feasible. And that's why granting agencies want you to do them. They just require a lot of guesstimates. Here's another. Ken Kelly is a good guy in psychology. He's done a lot of things that relate to things I've done. And he has a smart way of thinking about it, psychological methods. And this is his package, which is given on package MBESS. It's on PDF page 100, had it written down. That's his package that has a lot of functions in it. Sample size planning for power of polynomial change models. Could be straight line, could be like next word learning, which would be a polynomial. All those are reasonable situations. So he has a nice paper in psychological methods, and the power LMM, which we'll look at briefly, also has a paper in psychological methods. So those are good places to look. So sample size planning based on the width of the confidence interval is always a good way of doing it. And he has a couple of nice examples, tolerance of antisocial thinking and quality of marriage. And so different than medical examples, that's what we're going for. And his appendix, using R and MBESS to implement the methods discussed. And he goes through some basics of R, which is nice of him because this is back before even version 2.0. And he has a function SSAIPE.PCM, which require the same kinds of things that Long Power did. You can go through the details, and we do that. And so he gets a result, how you can specify the width of the confidence interval, and you need 278 subjects. And we'll do that. We'll do that example in review question 1. So again, same sort of thing based on the confidence interval, which is a wonderful alternative to the power probability detecting effect when it's there. So PDF page 100, just as a printoff of document page, manual page for that function. SSS power.pcm or SS AIPE, which is the conference hall version. So you can get either. And this references to Roddenbush's paper is also what PowerLMM is built on. And it's basically the same sort of thing you saw in Long Power. So PowerLMM, which has various vignettes, you can get them from the main page from PowerLMM, is a new package. Power analysis for longitudinal multiple models can even do three-level models. And we'll come to three-level models, which come up in multicenter. We do one in survival analysis, and we also do three-level models in STAT 196, the slash notation. Within centers, you could have treatment control comparisons. So you can have an extra level of grouping, or you could have experiments running within school districts over many school districts. So there can be additional level of grouping, which takes the growth curve analysis, which is individuals, and a collection of individuals, and then group nesting of individuals in different settings, such as different clinics, different districts. It's just a more complicated version. We'll come to that. Examples. So PowerLMM does a variety of things, same sort of thing as we've seen, but it's good to know a little bit about. And so GetPower is their main function. Pulled this from the manual, calculate power, and you need to give it a whole bunch of the key things. You create an object by study parameters, which is where you put in all the stuff. So it's that's a nice little grouping. So you have to go to the study parameters function, and you can see the innards of it. And it does a calculation. Of course, it's only as good as the guesstimates you put in, which are quite difficult to get at. If NIH wants it, you will do it. Okay, that ends our quick tour of Power. As I say, we have some illustrations and review question one. It's one of these things where there's lots of details and they differ study by study, so it's hard to go into a whole lot fruitfully in the time we have available. I have another 15, 20 minutes to do missing data. Okay, on lecture PDF page 104, we begin section 5 of our lecture topics, missing data concerns in longitudinal data, but there's also some background. For those of you, say, pressed for time or attention at this point, let me give a quick preview of the next 15 minutes or so. Missing data in the longitudinal observations doesn't cause us that much concern at all via our mixed effects modeling approach, i.e. LMER. It does create great difficulties for the old-fashioned repeated measures analysis of variance, which really needs everybody measured at the same time and no missing data. That caused problems. For us, missing data in the covariates does cause issues, and we'll see LMER just drops data with missing covariate information, just drops subjects. For the longitudinal observations, the mixed effect modeling just analyzes the data that's there. So if we have three observations on one person and seven on another, the individual with more information gets weighted a little heavier in the estimation, and that'll be the difference between LMList and LMER results. As long as you can be somewhat assured the data are missing at random, that is, if there's a reason for people dropping out and having no more information, such as a schizophrenia drug not working, then you will have some problems with those missing observations, because it's not at all missing at random. And so that's where we're going with some of these missing data approaches. So let's start out with Steph Van Buren, who is the author of Mice and All Other Things That Are Good, page 104. Of the PDF stack. as the beginning of his book, which has a foreword by Don Rubin, who's the creator of the multiple imputation methods that are widely used in missing data attempts. And the bottom level appeals to me. It's not that multiple imputation is so good. It's really that other methods for addressing missing data are so bad. Okay, PDF page 105 is simply an old cover page from Mice Manual, still relevant. Of a special usefulness is the JSS, Article Journal of Statistical Software, which functions as a vignette for mice. This is especially relevant to, say, standard multiple regression situations where missing data does matter and LM will just eliminate subjects from missing data. And so that might be something you'd want to try to correct. Multiple imputation is the way, standard modern way of doing it. Again, better than typical ways of doing it. And multiple imputation has taken off. You can see even early years, exponential growth. That's PDF page 106. And here we are, one of the talks on missing data. Let me just give you the rundown. This is the basic domain of missingness. Has a theme park idea to it. And you can have data missing completely at random, or more likely missing at random. That is, domain of missingness may depend on covariance and observed outcomes, just not observed. That is, the missingness doesn't have a systematic effect. And the missing not at random, that is, people drop out because the drug isn't working. That's missing not at random. That's a very hard thing to deal with. Missing at random is the assumption we need in order to do our LMER models. That is, people aren't dropping out for a reason, relevant to the protocol. They may drop out because their house burned down or something. That's a reason, but not a reason related to the protocol. Okay. So, missing at random. PDF page 108 from slide, probability of dropout may related to covariates and a pre-dropout responses, MNAR, which is the probability of dropout related response, time of dropout, and possibly afterwards. And that could well be schizophrenia drug not working. So missing at random allows us to do our LMER analyses, just analyzing the data that we have. Motivation. And why, how you treat missingness matters. You have a randomized psychiatric trial, measurements every couple of weeks, missing data due to dropout and severity of illness. Let's call that a scale. And then you can see the people that completed placebo and drug are rather different than the people that dropped out. And dropout could be missing at random, it's impossible to tell, or maybe dependent on dropout. So this is the kind of idea you're looking at. Doesn't give you a definitive answer, but allows you to see what's going on. So the basic theory, we have covariate subject guy, we have outcomes for subject guy, we have data model, effects of variance response, PDF page 111, just going through it quickly, and the missingness, a binary variable indicating whether you observed or missing, and you want to know whether probability of RI equals zero depends on anything. That's the distribution of missingness. Does RI depend on anything? And this is the missingness mechanism. Is it random, or does it depend on, let's say, how well you're doing in the treatment? We've been doing all along, LMER, assumptions underlying this is that data are missing at random. Same history, same covariates. And linear mixed models, which is what we've been doing, layered and where. These work for missing at random. That's all it's saying. And these long-winded talk slides, I just collected them because they are nice. And Fitzmaurice, Laird, and Ware, I could pull in more slides from them. They do a good job on missing data. But basically, bottom line, if you can argue missing at random, which is a hard thing, then you're good. Some responses, PDF page 116. When data are unbalanced by design, that is, you might observe some people less than others. Mixed effects models work. If responses to some subjects are missing, we may omit the missed occasions and apply, that is, keep the subject, maybe only has three observations, apply ML or REML is appropriate if the responses are MIR, and that's basically it, proc mixed, which is LMER. Also, omit subject occasion missing covariates, which LMER would do the same. We demonstrate that for the North Carolina data, I think, in these slides. Here is a from the Phil Lavorie papers, and Phil Lavorie is one of the founders of biostatistics here. Started out in psychiatry, then moved over to statistics. Has a wonderful table that gives us some historical view, quick historical review, and there's nice write-ups, part A and part B with psychiatric applications in the links. Okay, so summary of available options. Always do this and never do this. We like clarity. Careful deliberation about why the data are missing. Can you make an argument for missing at random? Last observation carried forward was a standard thing, LC, LOCF, I guess. You'll see that. Never do this. It's been standard in a lot of areas of medical research. If someone got up to level 7 and the last two observations were missing, you just impute the last observation carry forward. And never do this. Mean imputation. This is a standard for multiple regression, among other things. Never do this. Overestimates precision. That's what multiple imputation replaces. Only look at the complete cases. Never do this, because we don't know whether people dropped out at random or not. Endpoint analysis is another thing that's explained in the text. Never do this. Single imputation. Don't do this. Use multiple imputation. Mixed effects. Regression model makes all use of all available information. Can be complicated to fit, but we've mastered that. Assumes missing at random. Often a good choice. Hooray for Phil. Multiple imputation. This, and we see how to do this in a couple of different vignettes. If you're missing covariates, you could use missing at random. If you think you're missing not at random, you can try out various sensitivity analysis, but let's work through. So table 3 is a wonderful slide, PDF page 117. I commend that to you. The write-ups give, of course, much more detail. Last observation carried forward, PDF page 118. Missing values are replaced with the most recently previous observed value, which is what I said. And then you analyze it. Psychiatric adults online. You don't want to ever do that. Mean substitution, regression substitution, you don't want to do that. Endpoint analysis is a form of LOCF. I referred to that before. Baseline and things like that. Complete case analysis. So we go through all these, but I kind of ran you through the slides. So here's the write-up, which is in the linked reading, PDF page 119. Okay, PDF page 20. Again, this same example I had before. And we have completer only analysis, which severely understates the treatment effect, on PDF page 121. Well, we've kind of seen that. Case deletion methods, delete any subject with a missing value. Modern methods, you don't have to do that. And completers and dropouts seem to follow different trajectories. Analyzing only the completers may be very misleading. PDF page 123. This is a nice talk. We've said much of it as mean imputation. Don't do it. That's the old fashioned thing to do. Just estimate the fill in the missing data with the mean of all the other people. That's a bad idea. Last observation carried forward is a very bad idea. Right. More on LOCF because people ask about it because it's in lots of medical journals. So PDF page 126. I have lots of redundant slides. LOCF is not a good thing to do. Create treatment effects when none exist and mass real effects. Don't do that. Okay, I think I've said that enough times and the literature said it enough times on PDF page 128. You can see why I have 140 slides. I just carried over a lot of this stuff. Single imputation strategy tend to distort estimates. Missing data is draw accurate information about population quantities. If we do multiple imputations, we capture some of the variability. And that's what the EM algorithm in mice does. Okay, chapter 9 of Steph's book, long and wide format. It's a very nice read. And he has some examples there, PDF page 130. As I say, I just carried a lot of stuff to show you. We talked about long and wide. Other people do too. Multiple imputations, convenient dumb data in the wide format. That's easy, but not when you don't have everybody measure at the same times. So that creates. We can imputate in the long format, and we show you MIR tools and HMI, I think, are two packages that'll do that. Time raster imputation, section 9, that's the hard thing. It has nice stuff about chain scores that we talked about in time 1, time 2 data, so I have this thrown in case I had extra time. PDF page 135 is just the beginning. I mentioned the Journal of Statistical Software page, and I'll just spend a minute or two on this and the multiple regression example, and that'll be our day. But here's a lovely vignette, Journal of Statistical Software. It's linked for using mice, especially in multiple regression things. We even have a handout in that. And we have a couple different examples. NHANES data, PDF page 137. We'll just show you an example using mice for a standard multiple regression stuff. We have, that's again, page 138. It's the same thing. All right. And do a little bit of the NHANES data. We also have on our webpage, I just didn't put them in fully in the lecture, our links to HMI and MIR tools, a vignette I do in STAT 196, which will allow you to do multiple imputation of covariates in long form data. It's good to see what mice does because it's the core of things, but HMI or MIR tools, which we have worked out, is the way to go for long form data probably. Mice increases its capabilities in that form every once in a while. So we have NHANES data, we have missing data. Only half the rows are complete. If you just ran LM on this, you'd lose half your data. That's what LM does, so does an LMER. So we have a mice handout, PDF page 140, where I bring in the NHANES data, and then I run mice on the data in the middle. It's called impute DRR. It's my imputation. And it'll draw me 5 complete samples conditional on the information I have. And then the idea of mice and all these analysis methods is you analyze each of those data sets and then you pool the results. And that's what pool fit DRR does. So you're getting variability over your resamplings. You're not overstating precision by just putting in a mean. You're imputing multiple times. You could do it 50 if you wanted. 5 is the default. It gets you somewhat there. You can look at each of your imputed data sets. And then you run the multiple regression. Again, the seed was just to match the results in the random number generation in the GSS article. So you can do it a couple times, and that's the idea. Run regression on each of the imputed data sets and then combine them. That's your best estimate. What we do in the missing data problem, wide form longitudinal data, that's on the web page and is on PDF page 141. I just do a little bit on the North Carolina data. and do that. Oh, the artificial data example is that using wide form. So I wanted to show you that. That's an exercise of doing that. And then what I did just to show you in this last thing we do, we're at just about at time, is just to show you what LMER would do with some missing covariates. And for the North Carolina data, what I did is just take a complete version of the data, made Z the covariate missing for subjects 2, 3, and 4, and just show you that then what LMER will do is just drop them. So if you wanted to impute for them, if you wanted to keep those cases. So we had 277 cases. We'll only get 274 running LMER on the North Carolina data in the usual way we did that analysis. That's what it'll do if you have missing covariates. So that might be a case where you'd want to run multiple imputation. The only missing data, you could do this in wide form with mice and then recreate it to long form. That'd be a lot of work for three subjects, but you get the idea. That'd be one strategy if you have this convenient balance structure, which you sometimes do with real longitudinal data. We had everybody measure at the same time, complete data, except for missing a couple covariates on subjects 2, 3, and 4. So that's what I did, just to show you what LMER does. Not going to affect the results very much. You can compare that to what we did in weeks 2 and 3. So that pretty much ends it. I just want to mention Gelman's paper, come out of Columbia, Tsinghua, Package MI. He also has another one that does multiple imputation. I didn't include that in our links because I had more vignettes. So the idea of missing data is we're somewhat immune under nice circumstances using LMER. We can have some people measured 3 times, some people measured 7. Covariates matter, and maybe do some multiple imputation for those if you really needed them. Otherwise, they'll be dropped by LMER. So you are doing case-wise deletion, which isn't a great thing. So I should call week 5 to a close. We're just about at time. So we finished this by skipping over details on time. Week 6, we'll come back and talk about observational studies, a collection of special topics when we don't have a randomized controlled field trial. We prefer to have a randomized controlled field trial. Boy, do we prefer it. But sometimes that doesn't happen. And a lot of what we learn is from observational data. We just can't really have the same level of strong statement as we can from designed experiments. So we'll come out, try to be friendly towards observational studies, recognizing what they can't do. And of course, I'll mention other places where we talk about observational studies. So this is a call week 5 of STAT 222, STAT 222, to an end. You can see I've about had it.